Sunday Civics, the home for the civically engaged here on Sirius XM Urban View, Channel 126. I'm your host and civics teacher, Eljoy Williams, and today we're continuing to prepare you to take civic action in the new year. Later in the show, I'll be joined by my girls, Carol McDonald and Jamila Bay, for a discussion on something you may or may not have asked yourself, particularly since the 2016 presidential election. How do I choose a presidential candidate? The national news media is hinting at the road, the turn they will soon be making come January. The midterm election is behind us, and the lessons and fallout will soon be behind us as well. And as soon as the ball drops on New Year's Day, the speculation of who is running to challenge the current president from within his own party and from Democrats and Greens and Libertarians and Independents and whoever else is going to come out of the woodwork will rise to a daily onslaught of straw polls coverage, visits to early caucus states, strategic campaign hires, and formal campaign announcements. But while the candidates themselves weigh their options and consider making a life-changing decision to run for the presidency, what do we do in the meantime? How do we prepare ourselves and our community? But most importantly, how do you decide which candidate to support in the race to the White House? I bet no one has ever asked you that before, let alone given you an idea of how to make that decision. Well, we're going to begin that conversation today. Well, while I was in D.C. earlier this week, I asked two of my girls to join me for an open discussion on this topic. But first, I got my thoroughest girl with me, as always, June like the month, Moses like the Bible. Hey, June.
Hey, Eljoy Williams, political strategist who won't let me have a good time. We got to start picking 2020 already. Can I have Christmas, Festivus, Hanukkah, something?
I didn't say you couldn't have any of those things.
I feel like I'm not allowed.
Like I said, we were doing the shows leading up to 2020.
Okay.
I mean, leading up to 2019. So things you have to be worried about in 2019.
You're making me gray.
Oh.
I can't afford hair color.
Oh, okay. Are you saying that all working class people can't afford hair color right now?
Exactly.
Instead, so they should not be thinking about presidential...
Well, that becomes part of our legislative agenda.
No, that's you can't put hair dye on your legislative agenda. Okay, moving on.
You know what?
I want to bring into the conversation. First up is my fellow partner in Black Women's Political Empowerment, Carol McDonald. She is a social justice activist with 20 years of experience in political organizing with a special emphasis on communities of color. And she is now partner at 76 Words, a firm that turns campaign strategies into TV, radio, and online communications to elect Democrats and support progressive caucuses, progressive causes, actually. Carol.
Yes. Hi.
I'm happy to have you on the show.
I'm so excited to be here.
Thank
it's
you
my
for,
first
for,
time.
For coming. I appreciate you. I'm sure we'll have you back in some case, because now that you know this is possible, you like, I want to talk about this is what happens when I bring my girls on the show.
And there's like, going to be a lot to talk about.
There's a lot of things to talk about. And if I'm not mistaken, like, are you the only or one of the only like Black women led like that does like TV and communications at this level?
I am the only, and I keep saying that until somebody challenges me and says, oh no, me too, so that we can have coffee and have like our little caucus meeting. But as far as I know, I am the only Black person, not woman, person that makes political television ads for Democrats and progressives.
Wow.
Come at me if there's somebody out there.
Come at me, bro.
Come at me, bro. Come at me, girl.
Next up is my girl, Jamila Bay. She's a journalist and speaker based here in Washington, D.C., and she's a frequent guest on Fox and Friends, where she attempts to be the voice of reason. How's that working?
How you doing, girl? Dodge, I am matrixing that question.
You just bent over backwards.
My head is touching my ankles right now. but backwards, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know, I like to imagine that when you're at the doctor's office in the waiting room and that's on, I'm talking to you.
Okay.
You know, but yeah.
So basically, yeah. Those places, like when Carol, we travel to hotels and things like that, and they don't have like anything but Fox. Have you been to hotels like that?
Oh yeah, I mean, I actually on my own very own cable package at home, I only had Fox at one point until I called and had that changed.
Wow. Yeah, but there are places all over, and you know, I believe in, you know, listening to all different news sources, June, and like not just the ones that align with your politics, because you need to, I think you need to read. And as you know, I do the Civic Docket in the morning, and I read a lot of different outlets and platforms and things like that. But you
I
know.
Live in a bubble. I don't care.
Okay.
I like lions' dens, and I like kicking hornets' nests. So
I like you.
You know, I want to go
sassy.
Talk. Come at me, bro. Yes, yes, yes.
I know who I need to call if I'm in a fight. So yes. As usual, when we bring guests on, I want to hear their first civic action. I believe in the power of storytelling, as you know, Carol does as well. And so, Carol, I want to start with you first and tell us the story of your first civic action.
So I think my first civic action took place when I was in high school. And I guess by saying that I've been in the business for 20 years, I've already kind of aged myself. But this was during the first Gulf War. And my father was still active duty at that time in the Air Force. And while he didn't get sent overseas for that mission, he was sent away from our home in rural North Carolina to do support work for the mission in Virginia. And I remember both just being outraged about our presence in the Gulf War, as well as then also having that personal experience of having affected family members, and particularly having lost my father to that effort for months. So I organized a protest at my high school, and I had one of my dad's flight jackets, and I wrote on it with marker, "Bring our troops home." And we created, with luminaries, little white paper bags with candles, we created a giant peace sign in our school's parking lot. And we waited. We had our action right around 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening so that it would start at daylight and it would end when it was dark. And then very, I think, for those of you who know me, you will say, oh, that is a very Carol-like thing to do. You know, I was a leader in that organizing effort to put that event on. And then we chose our speakers. Even then, we were very mindful of having a diversity of voices. But then I actually, for the actual action itself, I went across the street and convinced the manager of the building to let me on the roof so that I could take photos of
the
candlelit peace sign from the tallest point that I could find.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was, on that roof where I spent that day with my photography teacher.
Wow. Wow, yes.
Go
very
ahead, little sister. Yes. Yes.
Very powerful discussion. Majority of the people that come and tell their first civic action, it is of a protest. It's either of voting related, or it's about a protest and about giving voice to their demands, which is civic action. It is speaking up and demanding to power, whether that power is to a principal, to a school administration, to the senator, to Congress, to the president, being able to speak in that way. So, Jamila?
Well, I have an asterisk, because my first civic action, I remember I may have been 3 years old, or I remember being warm. It was probably not cold, so I might have been younger than three because of the birthday and whatever. My mom was a telephone operator with Bell Telephone, and I remember walking the picket line with her. But that was me coming along, and I remember being with other kids. The first time I decided that I was going to exercise my own personal First Amendment right,
mm-hmm.
Picture it. 1984, Miss Rutherford's class. I'm a second grader, and I'm going to do this thing. It was time for the kids to vote for president, and I had composed my very first rap. Jesse Jackson, he's our man. If he can't do it, nobody can. Don't vote for Mondale. Don't vote for Hart. Because if you do, then you're not smart. And Miss Rutherford said, you can't tell people that they're not smart if they don't vote
it.
The way you say.
I love it.
Jamila, you have to change that line. I said, okay, I hear you, Mrs. Rutherford. Miss Rutherford, we had to go back and forth.
So it came time for us to do our little, you know, thing. And I got up in front of the classroom. Jesse Jackson, he's our man. If he can't do no way can, don't vote for Mondale. And she's getting mad. Don't vote for Hart. And she's sitting full up, eyes ablaze, giving me that black mama look that we all get when we 30. You right. know, you turn 30, they give you the look.
Yes.
And I looked right in her eyes and I said, because if you do, then you're not smart. Detention. I got detention Boom. For 2 days and I served it happily. And yeah, I didn't even vote for Jesse Jackson in 1984. So what good did it do in the end? I don't know, but it lit a fire in me and I love the First Amendment.
Wow. That is such a great story.
That is a great story.
We should remember this rap because think of how many verses we can have with the lineup that we're going to have in this
year. Oh my goodness. Coming
2020, primary. It's a race. There's people all over the place.
Flex right now, and I need bombs. Oh, yes. Like, I need a bombs button at this point.
Big horn.
Like, yeah. The big horn is just like exclusive. No,
fire!
But it really is June. Like, everybody and their mama running. Like, even Bloomberg. And then another bit, like, is he a billionaire or a million? Steyer?
Wait, where did Tom Steyer come from? What does he know. Do? And how come him and these commercials?
Do you remember, like, the first thing you notice about him is, like, the commercials? You're, like, watching TV and you're like, who are you?
That's like that John Baree boy who says he's the king of
Carol,
R&B.
Tell me, are you responsible for these ads?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Not me personally. No. Full disclosure, wow. Tom Steyer is, you know, we have done work there.
Mm-hmm,
he's a client.
See, this is why you have to ask questions.
Okay, so you didn't, like, just come
out
of
nowhere. Now, listen. No, absolutely not.
I don't care that she also... Like, it's not going to stop me from saying, who the hell is Tom Steyer and why is he always on my commercials?
Well, I was waiting for the explanation because she looked like she was going to share.
But what's interesting is also, so, like, not only in my commercials, June, but then, you know, I care for Grandma. And what does Grandma watch all day? Westerns.
Oh.
And Little House on the Prairie and stuff
the
like that.
She wrote.
And guess who shows up in her commercials?
Who?
Tom Steyer.
Oh.
It's no demographic. Carol, you're responsible for this?
It's not that we're responsible for this. And here, look, this is what, I mean, I think this is what I'll say, right? It is easy to characterize what we're going to see and what we've already started to see around who's positioning themselves, who's declared, who's running in 2020 as, we could call it a shit show. Are we allowed to curse on the show?
Yes, we can.
It's easy to characterize it as a shit show. I like to think of it as the full diversity of what we have on our side on display. And it's going to be very, very interesting to see who rises to the top. We have the Republicans for a long time have run their millionaires and billionaires. Well, we have some, too. We also have young people. We have activists. We have a greater deal of racial and ethnic diversity on our side and a diversity of experiences. I think what people are going to look for, and certainly what I'm keeping my eye out for, is who can mobilize our base? Who can energize the people that we just saw turn out in this last election? We have young people, electorally speaking, on mm-hmm. fire, right? Participating mm-hmm. In a degree that they've never participated before. So who's going to be able to harness that energy for 2020? Who's going to be able to speak to people's experiences and the hurt that they're feeling? And who's going to be able to, you know, again, capture our imagination and really bring some energy to this race? So I'm here for it. I'm here for the entire pack. And, you know, let's see who rises to the top and can really articulate a vision for where we should be going.
So before we get into the weeds, and Jamila, I know you have some comments as well. Mm-hmm. And before we get, like, you know, fall in love or fall in line with whoever emerges, I have some other things for you to consider to sort of, you know, use our critical thinking skills before we fall in love in the primary process and also in the general process. But we'll discuss that more. We'll take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll continue to discuss how to choose a presidential candidate.
Yeah. must do to start in this world. Like when the teacher, schoolboy and schoolgirl come together. Who is the teacher? I will let you know.
So ladies, I've been thinking about this topic for some time. Here on the show, I've instructed our audience, when evaluating any candidate for any public office, the first step is to know and understand your own political values. I start there because candidates, when they're seeking your vote, often start by coming to you, telling you what's important to them or what they view as the most important issues of the day. But candidates who are smart start with what we call the listening tour. They go around listening to recognize leaders and key constituents in the district they're seeking to represent before they are on the campaign trail, given their prescription for what ails us. And of course, a presidential campaign is much different than running for city council or even governor. Most people think it's one big election, but I remind you that if you're running for president, you're running a corporation and about 13 caucuses and 47 primaries. And even if you're successful in getting out of the primary, you then have a whole nother round of individual elections to contend with as well. Our vote for president is indirect. Presidents are not elected by popular vote, but we can have an incredible influence in the presidential process. So don't let the 2020 election be something that happens to you. Take civic action so that before a candidate rolls into town promising you the world, know how you're going to make your choice. So ladies, let's get into it. Join me in my classroom to discuss how we evaluate the candidates, the bevy of candidates that are presenting themselves for the 2020 presidential election. Jamila, I'm going to start with you. Just in your own individual process, let's think before, you know, and I'll come back to you, Carol, as well, before we get into like our profession, right, of evaluating who emerges. Talk about your own individual self and sort of what you are looking for while you're watching people's speeches, commercials, or going to town halls, if you will.
I am someone who loves to, it makes me angry that the book took that wonderful phrase. I love to play in the shades of gray. That's where all the fun happens. That's where all the nuance happens. And I don't agree with myself 100% of the time. So the political purity test that a lot of people want to place upon the candidates, well, I agree with her 96% of the time, but that 4%, I like to embrace my imperfect ally. I like to be like, girl, that's my sister, but if you bring up Miss Jenkins, I'm going to smack you. So when I'm evaluating someone politically, if you are about my freedom, I can work with you on a lot. Now, what does my freedom mean? I want economic justice. I want somebody who recognizes that my Black female middle classness has a whole bunch of people riding on it the way that most white female Black, well, not female Black, but female white middle class women don't have. If I'm doing well, I'm helping my sister or I'm helping my mama or I'm putting my niece through school or something. Those are issues that are important to me. My freedom comes when my people become free. Education is important to me. Housing is important to me. Anything that makes it such that I don't think that we're ever going to see Mayberry for people who look as I do, but if we can make it such that people who look as I do are able to walk up and down the street and not fear violence, and when we go to the hospital, we are not safer having babies as Black women in Costa Rica than we are in Ward 8, Washington, D.C. So anybody who's going to bring up topics that advance that kind of thing. All politics is local, so I speak for somebody who's, you know, here in the nation's capital. Taxation without representation, what? but for me, liberation, and I will parse out what that means by the candidate and by the issue. I like the messiness of the political process. I think we're seeing more folks recognizing that, but there are always those who go, I'm a single issue voter. I only care about X. And getting through to some of those people, too, is important. So if I can find somebody who is about my advancement, my liberation, the freedom of my people, who can also mesh with the single issue voter, I only care about jobs, then I'm really hitting on many cylinders with him or her.
Carol, Jamila brings up a good point in talking about particularly the messiness of doing primaries or an election in the first place when all candidates emerge. And even now people are discussing online and offline, well, we shouldn't have all of these candidates. We should boil down to one person because that's the best shot that we have, you know, to combat Trump or, you know, and things like that.
Right.
And I think that's wrong. I mean, you certainly know that I don't mind primarying people considering I my background. So, you know, I think a primary is good because it just moves people, I don't know, June, to your left.
It just brings people along and gets them to have some common sense in their life. Jesus.
So, but Jamila brings up a good point in people are looking also think that you should look for that purity test. I'm looking for the candidate that checks all of my boxes, that is exactly my like me. And there is no candidate that's going to be like believe exactly what you believe.
Right. And I think that some of that comes out of a scarcity mindset, right? That we only, you know, this notion that, yeah, we have one candidate that we need to move forward, but there's not just like one shot to get it right. I think there's so much hurt around the outcome of the 2016 election that people are processing. And I believe that having all these candidates is a really, really good thing because it's going to bring out all the issues that are important to people, many of which have not been talked about and have not had a national platform. And I think it's also interesting to me because the country is changing so rapidly. We're in the middle of all of that. I like to remind people all the time that in the 1940s, the American population, 83% were white. That was in the 1940s. By 2040, you know, white Americans are going to be the minority. And so we're 20 years away from that tipping point, right? We're 20 years away from that shift. And that's just bringing up all kinds of things in our culture and in our politics. So the fact that we have so many candidates this year, I think, is a little bit of a reflection on that. I think that in addition to Jamila, all the sort of the characteristics that you listed in terms of the issues that we want folks to focus on, the one thing that I would layer on top of that is I want somebody who is smart about that.
You started with the see, you started with stuff that we take for granted.
There used to be a time, if we're going to like harken back to the old days,
we can spell smoking.
You know, you had to have some experience and qualifications. And I think we see now the damage that that can be done by that. So, you know, first things first, I want somebody who is smart, who can think critically and analytically, that isn't, you know, that can fuck with the grays, like you mentioned, that can walk that nuance. I mean, we're a country of like how many? 375 million people, close to that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sort of that one size fits all, or that, you know, that one person that's going to be perfect on everything, that person just doesn't exist. And I think we need to be okay with that. Mm-hmm. I also like to remind people, and I'm a hardcore lefty, we ain't electing Che Guevara to President of the United States. It's not going to be the radical revolutionary at that level of a representative of democracy like the one that we have. And I'm okay with that. Now, you can get Che for school board.
City council.
You might could get Che for mayor.
Right.
And I think that's good. But at that level, I mean, they're just the way that our system is set up right now, it just isn't like that. It isn't like that with Citizens United. It isn't like that with the way that our politics are structured right now, which are lean heavily towards favoring corporations and big money and not favoring the average everyday person. And as progressives and as lefties, we have to navigate that. I think that part of the reason why we have so many candidates this time around is for a long time now, politics at the national level have not reflected truly where people are. People are way more left of center than our politics would indicate. And again, it's those structural advantages that the right has put in place for themselves, the way that they've gerrymandered districts, the way that they've consolidated the influence of big money. Even, you know, the old institution of the Electoral College that we've inherited really privileges a minority of voices. So someone has to navigate all of that. The person who's going to be the Democratic nominee has to overcome all of that to win. And so I would say for me, I want somebody who's smart. I want somebody who reflects my values. And I want somebody who's going to be able to navigate this and then win.
Well, and then it's not only the Democratic primary, but then there's, you know, is the current president going to be primaried in his own party, which typically, you know, doesn't happen. But there may be some people who are just like, we can't let this be our our legacy, and we need to at least stand up and say something. And then, as I remind people, there are more than two parties in this country, and there are people who are not identified with a particular party. So there are Greens and Libertarians and Independents and sort of others. And so as you're evaluating, maybe you don't identify yet with a particular party, but we're going to do a whole show in 2019 about how you cut yourself out of the process when you're not part of the primary process as well.
Some places cut me out anyway, and y'all make me sick. So what you're saying is I can't just get a tingle up the back of my leg a la Chris Matthews to pick who I want? That doesn't work that way?
You know what? I am not here to tell you how and where and why you get the tingle on your leg. I was not prepared for that part.
Well, then just Jason Momoa for president. Everything can tingle then.
Well, yeah, everything will tingle. Let me stay out of trouble because
I'm getting some trouble.
You know, I have a long history with Planned Parenthood. We are sex positive over here, so we can go there.
Well, here's another bee that's, what's the saying? A bee up my bonnet.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Bee in your bonnet. Yes.
Yes.
So thanking Black women is like the latest talking point that everyone is using.
Thanking but not listening.
From, you know, whether it's like your local, like, you know, organization head, corporate executives and things like that. But, you know, as I say, thanking us won't be enough. Particularly to use Black women as show ponies to demonstrate your level of intersectionality and diversity.
We're not props.
Real commitment is demonstrated by, let's say, an investment in economic policy that capitalizes on Black women who are starting and growing businesses, provides jobs for those Black women who are graduating at a greater rate with advanced degrees
than anybody else,
and then also provides opportunity for poor and working class Black women who are trying to provide a better life for their families.
Hello.
And if you are truly invested in thanking Black women, thank us with an investment in better healthcare outcomes that acknowledge and address our high rates of breast cancer, heart disease, and maternal death rates. Invest in public child care.
Yes.
Can't purchase
and education
any of that
for our children. Build and repair affordable housing and public transportation. Stand with us and help us transform a racist justice system and hold law enforcement accountable when the unthinkable happens. And don't just thank us and keep doing the same things. Keep prioritizing the same wealthy and white perspectives and upholding the same racist institution. Real change requires action, not accolades. So,
is this Sunday Civics or Sunday Church?
You know, sometimes, you know, we have a little church, you know,
Sunday
a little
heathen shout.
So, it's like, I don't even believe in God. But,
nope.
You know.
But I believe in this.
What a word.
Well.
I love it. So, I love it.
So I bring that up because, you know, in my truth, June, I'm evaluating. I've never done a presidential from beginning to end. I have yet to do
it's
a presidential
time.
From beginning to end. And so I'm also evaluating, do I want to get off this couch?
You can't help it. You're going to do it.
And work with someone who will be one of these 50-11 candidates.
Rip them into shape.
Why? Wait, pause. Why isn't 50-11 in a dictionary yet?
Is it in the Urban Dictionary? I believe it is.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of things in the Urban Dictionary that can't be the standard.
We need to work on 50-11 being Miriam in the dictionary.
Merriam-Webster now trolls the president. I don't know what's up and what's down anymore.
So here for us.
Kafifi.
I bring this up because I am personally not only evaluating what candidate I would like to see to ultimately vote in a Democratic primary because I'm a Democrat and then ultimately a general election, but then also how I'm evaluating candidates to go work for.
Yeah.
And that's a different calculation, Carol.
Yes, it
because
is.
Because that's not
yes,
only, I mean, you can make the calculation that will then be in the privacy of, you know, in the voting booth for you to go in and,
that's
you know,
like
we don't
it.
Pull levers anymore. We bubble in circles. But like, you know, that's done in the privacy of the voting booth. And that's between, you know, you and the booth. Yep. But when you're making a decision in terms of who to work with, right? Who is a client, who you're going to go staff and champion, right? That's a different set of calculations.
It is. It is. And I've done that. I worked for Hillary Clinton when she ran in 2007, 2008, and against, or then who became President Barack Obama. So I've been in that position. I've done that calculus. And it is a thing because it is all consuming. So, yes, what I am interested to see in this group of candidates, you know, Joy, you talked at the beginning about not just thanking Black women, but really lifting up Black women, hiring Black women.
Pay.
There's, there's a band whose name is Fuck You, Pay Us.
Equitable.
Yes. So I'm looking to see, I mean, the one place, and we've talked about often the lack of diversity in candidates who run for office and who are supported by the party. There's a real story to be told about the lack of diversity on the consultant side, on the operative side.
Tell it.
Again, I am, again, anybody out there? I'm the only Black television consultant, right? So, and in some ways you think that my phone would be ringing off the hook.
It should.
And it rings. You know, it rings, but I'm always surprised by sometimes how long it takes people. I'm not saying that I should get every piece of business. I should not. I'm not the best match for everyone. But as a firm, we have committed to making sure that we look like, at every level of our firm, the American public. So our senior partners, of which I am one, people of color, queer, younger than our counterparts. And that brings a different story, right? That tells a different, you get a different creative and you're able to tell a different story. I'm curious to see who is going to hire firms like ours. Who's going to hire diverse male vendors and phone vendors and media consultants and senior strategists and digital strategists? Like, who's bringing folks like me to the table?
Jamila?
So here's where I have to censor myself because, like, I want to scream F-bombs a whole lot right here.
I know. I've
we are having a reasonable conversation, and I'm taking it from reasonable to radical right here. Because, number one, what we have at this point in time, this is what happens when you don't make your kids read Orwell and they don't understand critical thought. I'm talking about the average American voter right now, because if you put content out there and the people can't process it, if you put information out there and the people aren't reading it because there's some call in and vote for singer show on, you know, then we have a disconnect. We have been duped by performative whateverness, performative wokeness, performative caring. The fact that we have a reality show star in the White House right now because he was able to harp on a couple of key words that the average two-year-old could understand. Great! Again! You know, and I'm bowing down Sister Muhammad right here because you hit it. We need smart. We need smart. We need smart voters. We need smart candidates. We need to be able to get up and say, look, this is a complex issue. You can't just say, Jesus did it. Global warming is a myth. You can't just say, you know, oh, thank you, Black woman, that's enough. And then you realize that everybody behind them looks like a Barbie pageant circa 1952. You cannot take your news from people that are paid to tell you how to think, you know. And so this is where I become kind of depressed and I get less than optimistic, because I think that we can bring out these candidates, we can bring out these topics, but if people are able to be led astray, run amok, bamboozled, and have Plymouth Rock land on them because of a cute, easy slogan or a pretty face. Not to say that there was any pretty face presidentially.
That face was not pretty.
No. But that's the thing that we have to be mindful of. And we who understand media and mass communications have to be talking this way to the people who seek to represent us. If you can't get in there, you know, it's one thing to be a tactician, but if you're faced with a brawler and you can't take a punch, you're going down.
that's right.
You know, and we have to recognize that going in. We know this is going to be a slog in 2020. We know this is going to be dirty and brutal and contentious. So what we have to do, you know, I'm of the mind, we have to say, okay, let's open the floodgates. The rent's too damn high, guy. Where's he at? Put him in. Let's bring everybody out and sort of battle royale our way. Let's see what issues keep coming up. Let's see what issues keep coming up. And the ones that you really think are going to have long-term ability, see if it's possible to kind of hold some of them back a little bit until such time as, you know, people stop being polite and start getting real. No, that was another reality show.
I love that show, and it was so dope. I was so there for the first one.
Oh, my goodness.
Heather B., shout out.
Heather B., Kevin Powell, what? You know.
Now, I will say, though, I appreciate you talking about language, because I think that's the one, like, elephant that's in the room that nobody talks about, because for those of us who get it, and for those of us who love it, there's this weird thing where a lot of people talk it like the 12th grade level.
Yeah.
And this man got over speaking at a third grade level.
Well, because that's where everybody is.
And so, I mean, newspapers so instead are written of doing at a fifth grade level. You got to meet people where they are. How about literally bending down and meeting us where we are? I'm a regular. So no one's talking to me if you want to get real.
Right.
Nobody's talking over me. Right. They talking at me. No one's talking to me. 2020, I want more than a tingle up my leg. Talk to me.
And I think that's a real issue on the progressive side. We have talked about this now for decades, that we tend to speak from the head, right? We tend to come with facts and figures and charts and strategies and solutions. And Donald Trump won in part because he was using that second and third grade language to get at people's hearts with fear and get at them with but it was a very emotional kind of reaction and response that he elicited in people and continues to. So I think that's a big part of it too, that it was very much so the simplicity of the language that people that was accessible for people, but it was also the values that he was communicating and the emotional appeal that he made that made him successful in 2016.
Oh, so you're the like PR lady, so how are you gonna mix that in the pot and come out with it so that we could talk at like a sixth grade level? We can all get with it. Because all the smart stuff can be boiled down to something simplified, too. I mean, I would think, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think when you talk about meeting people where they are, it isn't
really
just about words. I mean, we are on a, you know, we're on a radio show at the moment. Think about all the different ways that people experience the world and take in information and learn. It isn't just this sort of Socratic, let me talk you to death about issue X or solution Y.
Right.
It is. As how do you create an emotional connection with people? A lot of that. And, you know,
when you feel like you're
self-serving,
on the edge. Right.
A lot of it is through video content.
Yeah.
But it's through culture. It's through music. It's through
Democrats are in trouble. Democrats are in trouble because the Democrats, as it stands, and if I'm looking at 2016 to the most recent primaries, Democratic candidates had things such that it was, this is not who we are. Trump, this is not who we are. Babies in cages, this is not who we are. It was a position of countering the status quo. But if you ask 100 voters, dyed-in-the-wool Democratic voters, what does your party stand for? That's your problem. That's the Democrats' problem come 2020. Because if that voice is muddled and you're not having that message come out and that issue is not there, you're going to wind up looking very, very disheveled in the end. And one clear bell ringing, great again, that is the risk. I don't know how likely it is because people are mad and they'll vote against the status quo. But you cannot continue to have the party that stands for progressive issues, and you can't have the average voter sound and, you know, speak in line with what those average issues are because they can't name them.
Right. But I think that's where we get tripped up, right? If our strategy is to
be like to talk the Republicans.
About, or to talk to just to simply talk about the issues, right? Then mm-hmm. I think that we, again, run the risk of talking to people's heads instead of their hearts. I think we have to talk about a vision. I mean, if you think about Barack Obama's message, right? Mm-hmm. That message of hope.
Yes.
Everything that he stood for fell underneath that umbrella. But it was a message of hope. I think you're right that maybe the party doesn't have a way that they can, that they've been able to have a cohesive message since Barack Obama left office. But I think that what we saw in 2016 was a number of candidates who articulated a wonderful progressive vision for the future that excited me for sure, that I want to be a part of. I mean, let's talk about Stacey Abrams, number one, for sure.
I'm going to be her stunt double someday.
But I want to challenge Jamila a bit on this piece.
Bring it.
Because I don't believe, I think we get, because I hear this a lot about, we have to be like the Republicans and have a cohesive message. I think that's what we'll lose, continue to lose. You can't be like just like candidates who are trying to be Trump or beat him at his own game. You're going to lose. You can't do that. But the reality is that even Republicans, the Republican Party, has a wide variety of what Republican means in the Midwest versus what it means in, the East Coast or things like that. The issue becomes that once on the national level, or like a presidential candidate piece, is that from a messaging standpoint, they are able to articulate the singular message for that particular moment, but it changes over time and it changes in regions just like it does for Democrats. And I think to say to people that we have to, fit within that does us a disservice. What I will agree with you is that a couple of shows ago, we had Reverend Leah Daughtry, mm-hmm. and we're talking about, being able to help people understand what we mean when we say the Democrats or that or the party, which is different, right? Because, the party is responsible for electing a president. That's mm-hmm. all they're responsible for. in terms of a national Democratic Party or a national, the whole existence is for them to set up shop, for a presidential election, which is different from what are the values yep. of Democrats, right? Mm-hmm. And so being able to set up infrastructure and set up things in a way, and that's the difference where Republicans, at least from a presidential level, are different, is that the infrastructure that they have invested in over the last 25, to 30 years to be able to do what a national party does, which is elect a president, is longer and deep. Mm-hmm. And so they are able to use the math correctly, using their organizing structure correctly in order to elect a president. Or if they decide, we're not going to win this one, we're going to focus on electing judges, mm-hmm. and we're going to yeah. focus on electing governors and state legislatures mm-hmm. and school boards, again, builds infrastructure for mm-hmm. the larger party to be able to elect a presidential candidate come down the road. That is where I think that we need to do a better job, mm-hmm. is building the infrastructure as a party across the country, mm-hmm. where the demographics favor us, where we have not talked to June's point, where we have not talked to whole swath communities because we're worrying about, converting over white voters who Ugh. Long gone and told you to kiss their ass. That's where you build infrastructure to then, rather than trying to focus on people on this centralized message that everybody should be on point of. Because at the end of the day, the candidate, the national candidate that then rallies, that June gets the tingle up her leg, that Carol understands, you know, what the, you know, can, you know, write a television script for an ad, and that you, Jamila, are just like, okay, that, you know, they're about liberation for, you know, my people, and I don't agree with them on everything, but I see where the vision is, mm-hmm. you know, and then you have the infrastructure across the country to actually be able to execute it. The problem is, we'll get the person who can communicate a message, but then not have the infrastructure and the means yes. to be able to shepherd that person over the finish line.
Okay. Yeah. And so I agree with that.
When we come back, I'm going to close, and you guys will give your final words on letting people know what, you know, candidates are going to start stomping through the yard. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are some of the questions you would ask if you were in, you know, those small rooms of the listening tour these candidates are going to be doing all across the country, asking what's important to you? What are your what are you focusing on? If you happen to be in that gym, in that mm-hmm. library, in that Elks Club, in that airport hangar, this is all places where these things happen, by the way. uh-huh. If you happen to be in that room as these candidates are crisscrossing the country, you know, what do you ask? What do you say to them when we come back with more Sunday Civics? I tell the rhythm of the boogie to be a dead goal like simple and plain as Pamela basic Zulu arrangement, rocking amazement, flocko, radiant from heaven to pavement. They phony as a face that from nothing to play with. Spend time hating it, but that ain't changing. Welcome back to Sunday Civics. We could do another whole 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Easily.
Easily.
Can we please?
Continuing this conversation, but I promise you we'll have Carol and Jamila back on various topics. You know, I have to bring Carol back, June, to talk about persuasive political ads and communications. I have to have her back to
talk about.
Are there,
like, little things in the background that flash that, like, give me, like, different thoughts and I didn't know? Is that what's happening?
Okay, June, that's...
Subliminal messaging.
June, okay. She's not Russian.
We have it! I wasn't sure where she was going with that. I'm like, wait, do I have that? Can I do that?
We have to have Jamila back to just talk about a whole bunch of randomness. And yes. Mm-hmm. But before we wrap on that, you know, as I mentioned, you know, one of the things that these candidates, 5011 candidates, will be doing, that should be the title of my my article, 5011 candidates, is people will be having those small group conversations, mm-hmm. right, Carol? They yep. will be, you know, coming to somebody's Elks Club and going to local diners and caucus states and yep. things of that nature. You'll see them on TV, on Fox and Friends and MSNBC and CNN town halls, right? Having conversations with potential caucus goers and primary voters about what issues matter to them. They'll have to gather delegates and volunteers and diehards and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. If you were in the room,
yep.
Not as a consultant, but sort of as the, you know, potential voter in the room, you know, you got one question. You know, the mic is passed around to you. What are you asking?
Oh, one question, huh? I wrote down three.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I would hope that in this day and age, that in addition to going to the Rotary Club and the Elks Club and the local diner, that candidates are also going to their local Black Lives Matter chapter, that they are visiting their local mosque, that, you know, that they are going to the local shelter and truly, truly, and as we were talking about during the break, and come to the projects. Come to the hood and really meet people where they are. If I'm sitting in the room, I want to know, why are you running? What do you believe in? And what is it that you are going to do to beat this president? Like, how are you going to beat Donald Trump?
All right. Jamila?
One question.
Oh. I cheated.
No. I feel like the one question that we need to ask every candidate running is this. When your presidential library is named, what is the single lasting legacy that most will have written about you for?
Mm. Oh, that's a real good one. You got all deep.
I know.
Yeah, I'm not just like, fight all the time. Sometimes I think,
wow.
I'm going to go back to fight.
Hey, call your girl. I'm there.
And then I'm waiting for the tingle to come up my leg. So if you're not saying
it's tingling.
Anything,
hold on to tingling. Right? Like, don't look for the tingle.
Restless leg syndrome over there.
That's Chris Matthews. Like, you got a tingle up his
There's
leg from Obama.
There's a pill for that, you know. You and Chris Matthews need to wait.
Get some sponsorships.
On the, like, tingling up your leg and like, be smart. And use like and use the brain power and ask the questions first. But before we wrap, thank you, Carol and to Jamila for joining me for this conversation again. We'll have them back. Hope you love them. We'll have them back to continue the conversation. But before we wrap, I just want to say Merry Christmas to those of you who observe. By the time you hear this, I'll officially be on vacation, so you can at me all you want. Maybe I'll respond. But I'm officially on vacation until the new year. But don't worry, there'll still be a show here for you next Sunday, even though I'll be living it up with my husband in Vegas. I mean, having a moral vacation, June.
Whatever, I'll be celebrating Festivus.
Do you have grievances for me?
No, for you? No, I just want you to answer a text message. Make me feel loved.
Oh, my God.
That's all.
All right.
I love this so much. I love it so much here.
You have some time off, too. Some time to be with family, reflect on a year, make goals for the new year. And I also want to hear from you if you have suggestions and questions on what we should cover here on Sunday Civics in 2019. Because if you didn't know, we'll be here all next year. Mm-hmm. So what do you wish you had a better grasp on? Caucus process, what single payer means, what a controller or a county treasurer does, drop me a line, help influence our shows for the new year. You can reach me via email, joy@sundaycivics.org. That's joy@sundaycivics.org. You can always follow me on Instagram and Facebook and the Twitters and @SundayCivics, mm-hmm. @LJoyWilliams. You can yell at June, run up on June, and she will talk to you as well.
I'll talk to you.
You said run up on you?
Go ahead. If you want that smoke.
Okay. I just learned that that's a new thing. I don't want the smoke. That's a new thing that the kids say. I don't want the smoke.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. And again, for those of you who observe, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Thank you so much for doing this ride for us all mm-hmm. year long. It's been a whole year, our first whole year on SiriusXM, Urban View, Channel 126. Thank you and have a great Sunday. It's who we are.